music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very happy to welcome to the show a dancer who has shared the stage with some of the world's biggest artists, including Jennifer Lopez, Mariah Carey, Destiny's Child, and Janet Jackson. Mike Andrews is happy to share the story of his dance career and how special it was for him to dance alongside Janet Jackson during her incredible Velvet Rope tour. You'll hear what it was like behind the Velvet Rope and how much Janet still means to him. We also welcome Juno Award-winning artist Natalie McMaster, talking about her latest CD called One that she collaborated on with her husband, fellow fiddler Donnell Leahy. It is a real thrill to welcome this performer to the show. He's danced for A-list artists like Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Jennifer Lopez, Blackstreet, Aaliyah, Deborah Cox, Destiny's Child, and of course the one and only Janet Jackson. He was also one of the youngest choreographers to get nominated for an Emmy Award before he turned 21. Michael Andrews, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. How are you? Thank you.
I'm good. And I'm so happy to have you on the show because we've been really fortunate to have a lot of Janet's dancers on the show. And we have a lot of the Jan fam listening. So I know they're going to be very excited to sort of, you know, hear some of your memories. So thank you so much for doing this.
Awesome. No worries. I'm so pleased to be a part of amazing company.
Awesome. So I wanted to start off by actually asking you, you know, where did you grow up and how did you get into dance?
Well, I mean, to make a very long story short, I, you know, always did shows in my grandparents' living room and danced and sang and did those type of things. But it just progressed into a love.
As a young dancer, who did you actually look up to in the dance world?
Well, I honestly, firstly, Michael Jackson was the first person I saw that was, you know, just out of this world to me. It was magical to watch him. But at a point of time, when Jan came around, I just felt that energy. It made sense for me in my generation at that time. And I would do shows to her songs for my family. I know they probably were done with me with those shows, but I continue to do them. Fast forward.
That's so crazy. Now, before
isn't it?
It's so crazy. I can't even believe that you were able to do that and then actually dance with her. And I want to, you know, obviously get into how you met Janet. But what did you actually consider to be your first big break in the dance world? Like, what job did you get where you were like, yeah, I'm on my way?
Well, I'm not certain how to really pinpoint it, but I'd say it was a very small cluster. It all, you know, the 6 degrees of separation, it all ran into Tina Landon, who I idolize to this day. I met Seanette on a job when I was a youngster. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after then, you know, we were cool and would speak, you know, as dancers. And I went to an audition for Deborah Cox, and all the girls were a part of it. Tina, Nikki, Tish. It's the first time I met Tish, and she was pretty influential as far as her freestyle. And in my time, she is awesome. At any rate, that was my first time working with Tina, and I just kind of kept hold to her for some reason. So I'd say Deborah Cox with Tina Landon. That started it all.
And then when it came to the Janet situation, because I think that Deborah Cox video was around like 1995 or so, right? So when it came time to audition for the Velvet Rope project, did you have to audition or did Tina call you? Like, did she remember you? How did you get your sort of start to work with Janet?
My start with Jan was an audition process. Fortunately, I was able to know the girls already because I've worked with them as well as Tina. Yeah, I just auditioned in Los Angeles.
And did the audition take like a couple, like did you have to do a couple of callbacks or did you get it right away?
It was a very emotional time for me because I felt like my entire life was headed towards dancing for Jan. And so I'm here at the audition and at this time, I was working with Robert Vinton, Wiser, as some of the kids know him as, and we're in Japan, and I believe Robert may have had the job already, so it wasn't very many spots. The original girls were coming back, you know, so it was really intense, but I got concerned because Robert said that there was going to be more auditions in New York and here and there and all this. But at the end of the day, after all the auditions, it worked out.
What did it feel like when you got the word that you had made the team? Like, what was your reaction when you found out, yep, you're going on tour?
Oh, my God. I was like Mighty Mouse slash Superman slash Mr. Freeze. I felt like I could do anything. It was amazing at that moment. Absolutely.
And right away, when you got the job, can you talk to us about what it was like to be in rehearsal for the Velvet Rope Tour? Like, what were your days actually like? Like, you know, was it full days of dancing and all that sort of stuff?
Well, the days were pretty standard. Tina would really work us out with the stretching and all those technical things. And then, you know, we'd get to work. It was very disciplined, I'd say. It was, I was very, very young at the time. So you have to remember, like, I was ready for anything. Like, today, if Tina would pull that on me right now, it's like, oh my God, Tina, I know this routine, you know? No, but she's pretty tough. And Gil has a tough side as well. So it'd be a little different now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was it like when you were actually learning some of those routines, like the routines for Rhythm Nation and the routines for If? Like, you know, did they come fairly easily to you, or did you want to kind of rip your hair out?
Well, I want to tell you that If, I knew that choreography already.
That's...
Well, at least the breakdown.
Okay.
I knew that already inside of rehearsal. I mean, I was not as clean as the girls that have done it. I just felt like I knew it already. So I just had to get cleaned up a little bit.
And what was your favorite?
But Rhythm Nation was pretty difficult.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Like, both Kelly and Nick said that, you know, that one's a really tough one because it's so intricate.
Yeah, and luckily I was fortunate enough to work with Terry Bixler. He came in and he was a part of the Rhythm Nation team in rehearsals. And he gave us clues within that Rhythm Nation era of how to hit those things and get it done, which was a great help. Love him. Love Barry Leather. But Terry Bixler was a key opponent. He was there during the Velvet Rope, kind of giving us those things for that section.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was your favorite song to perform on, you know, on that tour? Like, what song did always sort of get you jazzed no matter, you know, what night you were doing the show?
Well, my the vanity side of me, like the side that I think that I'm so cool, would be the initial, the Velvet Rope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have the hats and the clothes and everything's beautiful. But I really enjoyed Rhythm Nation.
Okay. That's awesome. And I wanted to talk to you as well about, you know, because so many of us obviously saw the HBO special, you know, where you guys shot that in New York. And you know, I think a lot of us still have that DVD. I know I do. And
right,
and I think, I love that. And I think a lot of us, you can obviously find it on YouTube. And I know I love randomly just sort of popping on the throb section of that. And obviously it looked like you guys were having a lot of fun. Were you guys having as much fun doing throb and the freestyle aspect of it as we were watching you guys? Because it just looked like you guys were having so much fun doing throb.
Yes, throb was amazing because I don't know what magic Tina has. She's able to pull everything from everybody and make it work. And it just was a fantastic bubble of beautifulness with all of our styles together. But I remember doing throb, Robert and I were partners. We would change our routine every night. They wouldn't know what way we were going. And to be given that type of freedom to create by the end of, you know, some of the shows, by the time we got to HBO, we had already fell in love with one routine. I think throb was the most fantastic company routine I could ever imagine, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's nice to know that you guys, like I said, like from an audience standpoint, it just looked like it was your time to play, you know, during the concert. It was your time to have fun. So it's nice to know it was as fun as we thought, you know, we saw watching it. You know, for a lot of us that actually went to go see the Velvet Rope Tour. You know, as you'd mentioned already, Tina is a genius, and the choreography, I think, is just, you know, it's magical. That's not even a strong enough word. But especially near the end of the show, like I think I told this to Tina once in an interview that watching you guys do Got Till It's Gone actually made me emotional, because it was just so well choreographed and the music so amazing and so on, you know, going into That's the Way Love Goes and then Together Again. Did it feel special to all of you dancers at the time, you know, knowing just how well that show was being received by fans, and especially that, you know, that ending part? Like, it was just so, so amazing to all of us watching it.
You know, I'm so happy you asked me that, because I listened to Tina and Anthony and Kelly and Nick's interviews before I talked to you. And I was hoping I would be able to get into that. The Velvet Rope to me, very long story short, was very emotional in a sense where Tina allowed us all to be ourselves and grabbed what she did and made a masterpiece. Like, I'm not certain if it can happen again in that way, but it was amazing. With that being said, I'd say that I don't know. I'm kind of speechless. I don't know how to compare the experience between the dance.
Did you guys know, though, like, did you guys know as a dance group? Because I know when you're in it, sometimes you're in a bubble and you can't sort of see out or sort of know how other people are perceiving you guys. But did you have a sense that tour, like, it was really something special?
I did not know until, I guess, midterm. I was just so excited. Because, of course, I was finally with the Jan. I felt like my life plan. This is it. I'm dancing with Jan, and I'm a dancer. You know, a dancer is very emotional in those ways, whether it's an artist or, you know, stage-type dancer. But working with Tina and Sean and Kelly and Nikki, it's like us guys were just given everything. Like, they helped us so much. It was just magical. It just, we're very fortunate to be a part of that story, for sure.
We got, you know, I think a vibe, especially for people that went to the Velvet Rope concerts, like, live in person. I think the vibe that we got as fans and as audience members was that all of you that were on the dance team were a family. Were you guys actually a family?
Absolutely. You know, girls will be girls, but as far as family, absolutely. It was pretty easy, because Gil and I were in the same age range, so we kind of connected immediately. You know, Robert and I grew up in the same neighborhood and went to the same high school. I mean, a decade apart, but we're kind of from the same area. And Sean was a fantastic sister, and Kelly and Nikki are awesome, and Tina is Mama Bear. So it was very simple.
Can you actually describe, like, can you describe, if I say, you know, someone's name, I want you to describe them in one word for me. So if I say, I'm going to make
one
you
word.
One word, I know it's going to be hard, but I'm going to, so I'll start with Mama Bear, with Tina. How would you describe Tina in one word?
Mama.
Okay, that's good.
With an S and a Z.
And what about your buddy Rob Vinson?
Oh, brother.
Okay, Tasty Oreo.
Tasty Oreo is my super buddy.
Great.
So funny. Okay, I don't know what to say for him. Like, hilarious.
Okay.
Should be the one. Okay.
And
we have a similar hilariousness.
Yeah, you have do you have a similar sense of humor?
Just a humor, yes. Nailed it.
Okay, and what about Seanette?
Oh my God, love her forever.
Kelly?
I'm speechless.
Gil?
I'd say friends.
Okay.
Actually.
Nikki?
Oh my God, fabulous.
Fabulous. That's good. I like that. That's very good. Now, did you know when you were sort of dancing, like, what did it feel like to sort of end up having your own fan base? Because, you know, I've talked to the other dancers about this before, and you know, they sort of, you know, have all said that it was so crazy to sort of work with Janet and realize that, you know, she was very giving and pushed you guys forwards. And then in the end, you know, you ended up almost having your own fan base. You do have your own fan base, like the Jan fam loves all of you. So what did it feel like, you know, seeing signs in the audience with your name on it?
I haven't really had any fans leave messages for me in the audience.
Okay.
I think that was like more Tyson, the girls.
Okay.
But in general, the love that you get on the internet, which is, you know, it goes either here or there how people feel about you, but the love that the kids, well, when I say kids, I mean the fans, friends, Jan fans, it's awesome. And it's inspiration to us as Jan dancers as well to see the positivity. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I couldn't put it any better unless I put out a thesaurus or something.
Now, talk to us, Mike, about Janet. What was it like working for her? How does she make you feel when you were on tour?
You know, I don't want to make it seem like, oh, my God, I'm just saying Janet's the best. But my experience, you know, I don't know, should I say this? Like, I like flew private. I was in the best hotels and massages and things, you know. So the experience as a job was immaculate. The relationships that I was able to attain in that time frame are forever. So I think it's a winner.
What would you say to Janet today? Like, because like again, it's obviously it's almost 20 years since the Velvet Rope. You know, I can't believe it, but it's almost there. We're like year 18. You know, now that you have all this life experience and you've obviously done other jobs, you've worked with other artists. If you could sort of speak to Janet today, what would you want to say to her?
I would only say that I was thinking it's about time
for her to come back.
It's about time. That should have been the name of the album. It's about time.
Well, hopefully her team's listening, and we can. She'll know.
No, I'm just playing. But really, all love, and so glad that she's in this place, and we're all in this place to connect again, and all that good stuff. It's awesome. And thank you so much, Kelly. You're awesome. You know, it's not often that we can have this type of positive forum.
Well, I'm so happy to do that.
You.
Thank
like,
you.
Out of all of the dancers, I'm sure I can speak for everyone. But it's awesome. You're awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
You're awesome. Awesome.
Well, I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me because you guys, I've said this sort of individually to, you know, all the dancers I've had on the show so far, including the ones from you know, before, like Anthony Thomas and Terry Bixler. You know, you guys have all been so inspirational to me, and I'm sure I can actually speak for the fans in saying that because I think that you guys were such light and such joy. And you know, in my case, you inspired me to keep pushing for my dreams to do what I wanted to do in radio and television. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of other people can say that they push forward in the aspects that they wanted to do because you guys were just so great to watch on stage together. Like all of Janet's dancers, you all brought something to that experience. So I think, you know, we're the lucky ones. And I did want to, you know, ask you when the tour was over.
Kelly, you're killing me right now. Like I'm outside. Like holding my chest, I'm trying to figure out like what to say. I mean, but that's so appreciated.
Well,
no,
that's
honestly it is.
Well, we mean it because honestly, like I think you know what I've learned in doing these interviews with all of you, you know, Janet team members, Janet dancers, is that I feel like it really is a special sorority almost or fraternity or group, you whatever you want to call it, because I don't think other artists, you know, have this relationship with their dancers where all of you mean so much to us and you mean so much to Janet. And, you know, it's so great to sort of stroll down memory lane with you guys and hear what it was like to be there during those days. Because again, it was magical. You know, all the tours, Rhythm Nation, the Janet Tour, the Velvet Rope Tour, All For You. The list goes on. I think it's just so magical for all of us. So thank you for everything.
Thank you so much, Colleen. You're awesome. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And I did want to ask you, when you finished up the Velvet Rope Tour, mm-hmm. Was it difficult for you to adjust to normal life again? Because I know when I spoke to Tina, you know, this was several years ago when we did our first interview, and she'd sort of mentioned when you come off tour, you're kind of like a little all over the place because you're sort of used to this routine of traveling to city to city, and then you've got to be normal again. Was it hard for you to come back down to earth?
Well, actually, I don't think I left from outer space, in all honesty. I mean, if you use that analogy, I'm saying when I came back, you know, I was fortunate to get with the Aaliyahs, the Beyoncés, and the list goes on without giving a resume, you know, I mean, but the top girls that are pushing forward, you know, Jen's work status, I should say, mm-hmm. it led a lot of doors open, and it was awesome.
You know, I have to ask you about the Destiny's Child Say My Name video, because for people that don't know, you're the cutie in the orange scene. Which I actually just watched the other day, because like I was like, I have to watch Mike again. I haven't seen this video in a while, so I went and rewatched it. Mm-hmm. How much fun did you have, you know, working with Destiny's Child?
Well, it was awesome fun to be treated as like main guy and get fixed up and clothes and all that, and it was beautiful to see another inspiration come out. I was a part of something else again. It was amazing to me. I was like, wow. You know, I mean, in all honesty, regardless to what might be popular at the time, but me coming off of Velvet Rope and doing certain things and then being the lead guy that time, I kind of felt myself. I felt good.
Amazing. And it's really interesting that you said that working for Janet kind of opened up other doors for you.
Oh, wow. Even to this day. So, you know, right now, mostly I've been working with, you know, newer artists. I've reconnected with, you know, pioneers of the dance world, which I would love to mention everybody, but it's so much. But I'm just reinventing right now. I took a little time to get perspective of what I really wanted, and you know, this creativity that Jan just put out recently gave me a little bit of inspiration. In the past years, I've been uninspired with music completely. Like, but you know, that goes without saying for some people. You know, I'm inspired by music. I have to get it. Feel, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to put you
and
slightly.
This feels good.
No this sleep. Feels good. The no sleep feels good. That's awesome. If I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here, but if you look over your career, mm-hmm. you know, and you remember your time, you know, on the Velvet Rope Tour and dancing with Janet, where does it rank, you know, in your career in sort of list of importance?
It's absolutely number one, period. The things I feel that led me to Janet were very significant and awesome, and it made me meet the people I need to meet and dance and, you know, progress. And then even after the fact, it maintained momentum. So it was, I can't describe how great it was.
Fantastic. And are you still in contact, by the way, with any of your fellow like Velvet Rope dancer friends?
Yes. Everyone.
Great. That's awesome. That's great. I think all of us secretly want to know that you guys are all still tight, because I think it just gives us, you know, happiness and joy and peace knowing that you guys are still friends.
I mean, aside from Tish and some of the other kids, Brian Friedman and, you know, the brothers, there is a slight fraternity. Sorority. What mm-hmm. did you say?
Yeah, earlier? I guess it's like a special group. It's like you guys have your own association.
Yeah, I love everyone, actually, before and after.
Awesome. And it was funny because you said mm-hmm. that you listened to the Kelly and Nick interview and mentioned that it would be good mm-hmm. to get you guys all together. Is that something you guys would like to do?
Absolutely. I would love to. Tell me where. I'll show up.
Very good. Well, I'm going to make
I'm going to show up in something crazy.
Nice. Like I'm going to make sure
Nike
that Kelly listens to this.
Car or something.
Because Kelly's got to organize this, so I'm going to tell her she has to listen and the fact that you're going to show up. So, Mike, I really appreciate this. And people can actually follow you on your social media. I know on Facebook it's Mike Andrews. And also on Twitter and Instagram it's Mr. Andrews 8. So people can find you there, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much, Miss Kelly. I really appreciate talking to you. You are awesome.
Thank you,
awesome,
Mike.
Awesome, awesome.
That is dancer and choreographer Michael Andrews. And again, don't forget to follow him on his social media, Mike Andrews, on Facebook and again on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Andrews 8.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Like us on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show.
We're happy to welcome our next guest, who is a world-renowned fiddler from Nova Scotia. Natalie McMaster has wowed audiences with her talent and has picked up numerous awards along the way, including 2 Juno Awards and being made a member of the Order of Canada back in 2006. Natalie just released a new album called One with her husband and fellow fiddler, Donnell Leahy, and we're thrilled to have her on the show. Natalie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Great stuff. Thanks a lot.
So, Natalie, I wanted to start off. I always like to sort of make my guests go backwards a little bit and sort of tell us how you kicked off your musical journey in life. Was a career in music always in the cards for you?
Yes, although I didn't know it. I grew up in Cape Breton Island, of course, and it's such a musical place, in particular fiddle music, and I grew up in the thick of that. My mother always played music, just like playing a tape recorder, really. It was in the 80s. And my father played fiddle a little bit, and I started when I was 9. But, you know, I always find it interesting when people say, oh, why'd you get started? Why'd you pick the fiddle? And really, it's so much more of a way of life than separated like that. Just integrated in school activities, in community activities, in home life. So it's very holistic, so supposedly.
Who would you say would be instrumental in helping you get off the ground in the music industry? Was it your family or connections you made because you started playing so young?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of what I was going to mention. After the first question, I kind of forgot. But, no, it was definitely a very natural process as well. I never intended on making this a career because at the time that I was playing, at the time I started playing music, no one was playing music as a career. Even the busiest fiddler, which would have been my uncle, Buddy McMaster, he had a job for 40 years with the railway station. And so I thought, well, that's the best to hope for is to be able to play some music and keep your job. So, but as far as who helped me along, so I didn't have any aspirations to make this a career. And so it came about really naturally. Like my mom answered the phone, really. Wrote everything in a calendar. Some people would call and ask for, oh, is Natalie able to play at our church supper, you know? we just wanted to play a medley of tunes. And then it kind of just grew. People would call, you know, from Halifax. And then I remember we got calls from Boston. And then we got, the most exciting call. I think I was 12 when I went to Boston. But when I was 14, I played at the Expo 86 in Vancouver. So traveling to Vancouver was so exciting and being part of a show for 2 weeks out there. But all that was done at my mom and dad's place. And I realized that I needed some help organizing things. Mom never really, she wasn't a manager. She literally answered the phone while I was at school or whatever and took bookings but never sought out opportunities or anything like that. Wasn't connected to the industry at all. So we got a manager, and then things started to change a bit. I was kind of becoming more of a musician for a living.
And when you look back at your childhood, I think, you know, a lot of maybe people would think that you only listened to fiddle music, which I'm sure obviously was very important. But were there other styles of music that you listened to that you have found over the years have seeped into how you play, even though it might not necessarily be the genre of music that you do?
Yeah, I mean, we grew up with pop music for sure. I had 2 older brothers who listened to all the happening stuff at the time, which would have been Ozzy Osbourne and Def Leppard and Led Zeppelin, you know, heavier groups. But I listened to a lot of just pop music from the 80s, which everybody kind of says, oh, that's terrible. But I loved pop music from the 80s because I was 14, 15, 16. I mean, that's what I was loving. And so still today I get, shivery feelings when I listen to old tracks of Duran Duran or something. So that stuff, does it come into the music? I don't know. I would say it does. It doesn't intentionally. Mm-hmm. I've never sought to, you know, make my music sound heavy because I love Def Leppard or something or AC/DC, but I'm sure that it's come in kind of subconsciously. You know, I have played with electric guitar and stuff over the years, and I like that. I like those sounds.
I wanted to ask you about composing your music, because I watched an interview with you online as I was preparing for our interview. And in this particular interview, you said that 95% of the music that you play, you've learned by ear, and that you don't necessarily read a lot of music. You can, but you don't. Is that still the same way that you go about things today? Because I think this interview was from a few years ago. And how do you get inspired to sort of write naturally?
Well, writing naturally is different. First of all, yes, I just pick up tunes, you know. I listen to tunes, usually recorded tunes, and I just kind of stop, rewind is how I learn so much of my stuff. And then more recent times, you know, they might have a CD, and you just literally keep playing it over and over until you learn it. I never did have one of those units that could slow down the music, so I had to just do it on the fly. And that may seem like, wow, cool, but it's actually nothing. It's just, when that's all you've done, that's all you know, and it's very easy. Mm-hmm. So it's not that big a deal, and that's something that I would say 95% of Cape Breton fiddlers, that's how they learned their craft. But, you know, I like to read. I can read a bit of music, and I have learned some tunes like that. As far as writing music, I can read enough that I can actually literally write music to remember tunes. I'll write the first two bars, the first two measures of the piece or something. And then as far as creating music, you know, actually inventing your own tune, that is something that I haven't done a lot of. But in more recent years, now that we have six kids, I literally have to book aside time. Like Danelle and I, my husband and I, were on this. We just got off like a 40-show tour. And I thought, gosh, we have to at some point write on this tour because we have a babysitter with us. What an opportunity. So we went for 1 hour one day, and the kids, we sent the kids to the pool with the babysitter, and we were in the adjacent room. It was actually the workout room, what do you call it?
The fitness center. Yeah, fitness center.
So we're in the fitness center with our fiddles, you know, taking an hour to write. There was no pressure. It's not like we have something to write for. It's just general wanting to always come up with something better. And so we came up with some ideas. So, you know, writing is very purposeful now.
Joining us on the show is Juno Award-winning artist Natalie McMaster. Make sure to check out her website, nataliemcmaster.com. Can you talk to us about your new album, One, with your husband? You mentioned earlier Donnell Leahy. Obviously, he comes from his own sort of musical family as well, well-known throughout Canada and beyond our borders. Was it a long-term plan to record this album together? Because it's almost like you guys had your own things going on for a long time.
Yeah, we did have our own things going on, and that's just the way it is, the way the industry works. You're usually booked a year or two in advance. But, I mean, there's all sorts of holes. You can do bookings, but for general overall tours and things, yeah, we're booked far ahead. So Dan and I always wanted to record together and do as much in music together. That's very exciting, especially when you're first married, to have those projects, you know, in your back of your mind that you do together. And I don't know why it took us 12 years. I guess that's how pathetic we are. It took us that long to, like, make it happen. And so, yeah, I don't really have any reason in particular. I mean, we have six kids, but I wouldn't say they slowed down anything, really. You just kind of keep taking on projects and keep doing them, and you find ways to do them with family or without family.
Was it challenging to work with, you know, your partner in life? Because I know a lot of people say they can't mix business and pleasure, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, everything in life depends on who. It's the relationship itself. It's not a label. So I remember hearing too, don't ever marry another musician and stuff like that. But I don't really buy it any of that. I think if it's the right person, it's the right person. So for us, it works. For us, it works. And it works incredibly well. For some reason, Danelle and I have very, very similar tastes in music and in most things in life. Like, you know, it's just the way it is, and it works well. And we enjoy working together very much. We both feel like the material we do together is stronger than the material we do apart.
That's awesome.
So we want to keep doing that. And it's so good that it works and feels like that, because with children, there's so much greater desire to keep the family unit together. you know.
Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to ask you about the kids, because I also watched another video and I saw your kids going to town on the fiddle too. So are all of them, you know, musicians? I know you have some really young ones, so I'm not sure that they've got there yet. But is it just part of the family tradition that, you know, they're going to all play the fiddle?
I think they're all going to play. Yes, we're going to start them all, so they'll play. And they don't resist that. I mean, we start them young enough. They see us doing it. They see their older brothers and sisters doing it. They just do it. And Julia is our 4-year-old, and she's just started maybe, you know, a couple months ago. And she loves it, you know. She looks every day for her fiddle lesson because I think she sees that as our way of life. She probably thinks that every little girl has fiddle lessons from her mom and dad every day. You know, just kids don't analyze. They don't think about things too much like that. So it's wonderful. So it allows us to teach them music. They are definitely very musically inclined. And where that leads to, I hope they'll always play,
mm-hmm.
Especially if they're inclined, if they are. But, you know, maybe they'll, my hope is that they'll always play music if they branch off from fiddle and maybe find interest in another instrument or something. That'd be great, too. It's just somewhere to begin, you know. But definitely music, we want to, music is good. Talk to anybody. Music is good on so many levels for kids to be learning instruments. So at the very least, we'll adopt that philosophy. And we homeschool as well, so you have to do, you know, you can't all, you have to be varied in what you teach your kids and the experiences you give them. And so it works in every angle.
Do you find, Natalie, after the fact that you've had, you know, you do have 6 kids, and obviously that's like a huge responsibility just in and of itself, and then you have this musical career going on, do you find that you have to be more focused in the time when you do have time to play music because you have 6 kids that need mommy?
Do I have to be more focused playing music?
Yeah, like when you actually have the time to do your musical career, do you have to sort of really, I guess, cherish those moments and use them to full benefit just because you do have so many demands upon your time for the rest of the day?
Yeah, you do. Focus on everything a bit better and stronger. And people say to me all the time, oh, how do you do it? I don't know how you do it. And I'm looking at them saying, I don't do it. You know, there's like everything's falling apart, it seems. It's just life. Our life is frantic and full, and I would not change it. I would not change it. I love what we do, and it's going to be difficult with 6 kids. So, yes, the moments where we're on stage playing music or where we're off stage writing music or where we're practicing music, those moments, you have to, if you get a moment or if I get a moment, yes, I do really savor it. I do really enter into that space. And the productivity is high. The efficiency is high because it has to be. You're not going to find more time anywhere to do it better. I have a new philosophy in life. No time's a good time, so any time works.
That's awesome. That should be a bumper sticker. I love that. That's so good. I did want to ask you as well, if you have time or you've had moments to realize just what a national treasure you are, because I mean you are a member of the Order of Canada, which obviously not everybody gets that. You have been awarded obviously with Juno Awards and a bunch of other awards. Do awards and these accolades mean a lot to you? I know that you wouldn't just sit there and think about them day in day out, but when you look over your career, I mean you're still very young and you've accomplished so much. What does it mean to you to know that you really are, I think, a Canadian national treasure?
Well, that's really sweet. That's really nice for you to say. I have heard nice things before. People say, oh, you're an ambassador for our music and all this sort of thing. And for me, like, I'm just, things have come about naturally. I haven't gone out to seek any of those things. They're sort of spin-offs. I'm very honored and proud of those things. Do I think about them? Well, I actually try to because of the fact that I don't think about them. And I've always been like that. Mom used to always get me to read my fan mail letters
awesome.
That would come in. And, you know, and I just never was interested in listening too much about all the good things people had to say. And I don't know why. Somebody told me once, if you're going to read the good stuff, you got to read the bad stuff. If you're going to believe the good stuff, you have to believe the bad stuff. I guess it keeps you humble. I don't know. I just try not to think about it too much because sometimes it can be like a pressure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really, if I've gotten here from not trying, I think I just want to stay being who I am and not overthinking about, you know, being a model or anything like that. I think I'll just keep doing what I've always done, which is just, you know, play fiddle and try and be really good at it and make great shows and, you know, keep doing that and let the chips fall where they may.
I did want to ask you, too, about the fact, if I understand this correctly, you don't live in the East Coast anymore. You're in Ontario now. Was that a huge step for you guys to take as a family to sort of leave your roots? And do you miss being back East?
That's a great question. And something, surprisingly, has not come up very often. So when I got married in 2002, Danelle was an Ontario-raised boy living in Ontario, and I was a Cape Breton girl living in Halifax. And I had an apartment, and was living there for 6 years. I was renting an apartment, and that's about it, and traveling a whole pile. And Danelle had a house. He had 100 head of cattle and 100 acres of land. It was very obvious that I would come up.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I really believed in the lifestyle of having, you know, I loved the farming lifestyle. Even though I didn't grow up with it, I really admired that about Danelle. And I wanted him to continue that, and it's a little bit trickier to... I mean, he was already established. There was no point in making him uproot when I was the one that wasn't settled anywhere. You know, I was born in Cape Breton, and I stayed there till I was about 18. And then I moved to... Or then I went to college, and then I moved to Halifax, and then I came here. So it wasn't... Because the decision was so obvious, it wasn't a hard decision. And it was hardly even a decision. It was just that obvious, I guess. But I certainly adore my Cape Breton island. I just love it. And I can't believe that I'm going to be one of those people that I always meet at my shows. They come up to me and they say, "Oh, Natalie, I'm Cape Bretoner too." And I say, "Oh my gosh, what brings you here?" "Oh, it's been 40, 50 years since I lived in Cape Breton." I hear that so often, or I hear people say, "Oh, I'm a Cape Bretoner too." I say, "Oh, what part are you from?" "Well, actually, my mother's from Cape Breton." And so I think of my children saying that, and I think of me saying to somebody else, "Oh, it's been 40, 50 years." So that makes me sad. I can't even imagine that. I don't feel like I'm separated from it, I guess, from the heart of it. So I don't like that. But as far as Ontario goes, I mean, we're raising our family here, and it's a beautiful place to raise a family, and I'm very proud of this farming lifestyle and what we have, so I'm grateful for that. And I go home every maybe 3 times a year, and I see my family probably 6 times a year, so
okay,
you do what you got to do.
Gotcha. And before I let you go, I did want to ask you, you know, what goals does, or career goals does Natalie McMaster have left to conquer? Because like we've said, you've achieved so much, but you're still so young. So I'm assuming you still have thoughts of things you'd like to do.
Well, you know, are you a parent?
No, but I have 3 nieces and a nephew, so I'm broke.
Well, anyway, things really do change when you become a parent. And for me, I'm sure you've heard this before, but life really becomes about them. You live for your kids. All those things are really true. And it's just, I don't care about my successes for myself anymore. I care about how it relates to them. I care about how it relates to my husband and what it will mean for their future. And, you know, all this plans of mine, what do I hope to have? Do I have any ambitions or any goals and all those things? My goals are, I suppose, to get my kids to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like them to be flying upward in life, not downward. And that's a big lifelong task and commitment. Constantly, it's constant. And secondly, just to have them molded with good morals and to be all that they were meant to be. And that's a big, big task. And I'm absolutely consumed by it. And as my husband says, obsessed by it. And I suppose I every now and again have to just chill out a bit and say, well, enjoy this moment of, you know, be it a great performance somewhere, this, that, and the other thing. And you talking about those awards, I do take moments like that for myself because I have to, I'm inclined to not do that. So I think it's important to give yourself a little pat in the back every now and again and just say, you know, all in all, look at these 42 years. This has been accomplished in that. And even though there's some trees around you, you have to see the forest through it. So anyway, yeah, my goals in life are them and how their music relates to them and embellishes their lives. And when it stops doing that or becomes something negative, then I have to rethink. But so far it's been awesome, and I just want to continue on that path. Making this recording with Danelle was definitely a goal, and we're so, so happy to have accomplished that. And we have lots of, our business structure is ever growing, and those are wonderful things. They're alive, they're growing, they're constantly in motion, and that's a good, good sign.
Awesome. Well, we are so happy to have you on the show, and we'd love to have you back anytime, and all the best of luck with the new album.
Great. Thanks a lot. Nice to chat with you.
That is Juno Award-winning artist Natalie McMaster. Again, check out her website, nataliemcmaster.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week. And as always, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Mike Andrews and Natalie McMaster. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Winston Churchill. Kites rise highest against the wind, not with it. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, on Instagram at Kelly Alexander Show, and of course our YouTube channel, which features all of our important interviews, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.